Hello, and welcome to the American Writers Museum Author Talks podcast, where we bring the power of the written word straight to your ears. This week, Maggie and Africa Brown discuss the legacy of their father, Oscar Brown Jr., and perform some of his work. This conversation originally took place February 26th, 2026, and was recorded live at the American Writers Museum. We hope you enjoy entering the mind of a writer.
Tonight's program is offered in conjunction with our newest exhibit, American Prophets, Writers, Religion, and Culture, which looks at the ways in which religion and spirituality have affected American writers' work and how that work has in turn affected the practice and perception of religion in this country. A poet, playwright, songwriter, actor, director, and activist, Oscar Brown Jr. embodied the very spirit of creativity fused with social conscience. Born and raised on the south side of Chicago, Brown used his words and music as instruments of truth, courage, and transformation. His career spanned theater, television, film, and jazz, leaving a body of work that was all at once entertaining, revolutionary, and timeless. Here tonight to perform their father's work and discuss his legacy are his daughters, Maggie and Africa Brown. Please join me in welcoming them.
Yay.
Hi.
Yay, you for being here. And thank you, Allison, for the wonderful introduction and for us being here.
In the American Writers Museum, we are so honored to be here tonight.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, and we're going to tell you more about how we came to be here. And even on this evening and once this past November as well, appearing, that is. So I'm Maggie.
I'm Africa Brown.
Yes.
And we are the daughters of Oscar Brown Jr. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's why we were lucky enough to be born into this family. And so, you know, he was a poet.
A playwright.
A songwriter.
An activist.
A compulsive truth teller.
Yes.
My goodness.
And most importantly.
You know, he was a man who believed that words should move people. So tonight, we want to introduce you not just to our father's work.
But also his way of thinking and his way of writing, his way of being a performing artist in the world, really.
That's right.
And so the first cue for us, Christopher, we just thought, listen to a little of Oscar.
Yeah,
start.
We'll kick it off with him.
Dream of a land my soul is from. I hear a hand stroke on a drum. Shades of delight, Cocoa-hue, rich as a night, Afro-blue. Elegant boy, beautiful girl, dancing for joy, delicate whirl. Shades of delight, Cocoa-hue, rich as a night, Afro blue. Two young lovers are face to face with undulating grace. They gently sway then slip away to some secluded place. Shades of delight, Cocoa-hue, rich as a night, Afro blue. Whispering trees echo their sighs, passionate pleas, tender replies. Shades of delight, Cocoa-hue, rich as a night, Afro blue. Lovers in flight, upward they glide, burst at the height, slowly subside. Shades as a night, Afro blue. And my slumbering fantasy assumes reality until it seems it's not a dream. The two are you and me. Shades of delight, Cocoa-hue, rich as a night, Afro blue.
musically.
Yeah, this was that's our dad. And musically revolutionary, because it was just him and that drum,
mm-hmm.
and his words,
the voice, and the his presence, and his yeah. message. That's
the courage.
Yeah, the stuff that has kind of lingered on. Mm-hmm. Daddy's very hyphenated, but that was one of the earliest recordings of his on his first album.
Yeah, he didn't just write poetry; he embodied it. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he believed that poetry was not passive. It was something that was active.
All right, look at the word activism. Right there in the beginning, act.
That's right.
And my father, he would write a poem and step on stage.
And act it out. Right. And so that kind of transferred, trickled down to us.
And sometimes he didn't just act it out, he acted up.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah, right, yes. He revolted with rhythm, with language, with truth.
His poems challenged racism, poverty, war, hypocrisy, injustice, mm-hmm. but he never preached.
No,
he performed.
Yeah. Stuff like,
forgive me if I seem to preach, but there is something that I gotta say. A message that I hope will reach the people who are throwing life away. I call it my philosophy, and that is why I pass it on to you. Because it works so well for me and helps me get away from strife. I hope you listen carefully. Say the truth will make you free. And that's the way you wanna be. Because, brother, this is your life.
Mm, now, here's something people wouldn't necessarily know about our dad. In terms of like the masterful way he would structure his poetry and his writing, right?
Yeah, in many of his poems. And in this play that we're going to talk about, he used something called iambic pentameter.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. And so that heartbeat, that rhythm of language, da-dun-da-dun-da-dun-da-dun-da-dun, right?
But soft what light through yonder window breaks, it is the east and Juliet is the sun. So it's like the classics,
oh, yes.
You know, it's like a Shakespeare. It's but it's filtered through a black experience, through jazz, through blues, mm. through his life, through Chicago, the streets.
Right. So his plays weren't just emotional. They were engineered.
Yeah.
Yep. He realized that the poetry of Shakespeare, it used the cadence of the blues. Mm. And when Daddy discovered that, he dug it. He really dug it. And he thus, you know, went on to write that way. Yeah. His music and poetry and drama and rhythm articulated it, the black experience. And he even wrote, in this case, about the antebellum atrocities of slavery.
Give him that example of the blues.
Oh, I'm sorry, I see. I love to hear my baby call my name. I love to hear my baby call my name.
But soft what light through yonder window breaks.
Mm-hmm.
It is the east and Juliet is the sun.
Right. So
and
that's
it is, it's really the same cadence. And so once he figured that out, and he wrote a whole play called Creasy, and it was written, the whole thing, from beginning to end.
Rhyming and iambic.
That's right. And so the conversation that we're going to recite is it's inside of this play, and it's between Peterson, which is an abolitionist, and Stacy Talbert.
Stacy Talbert is a slave owner on the Talbert plantation in this antebellum South musical. And so at this point, Stacy Talbert's favorite slave,
Cato,
has a terrible thing has happened. And unfortunately, Cato ended up shooting and killing the white overseer. And so now,
He's being hunted
by his slave master, who really, you know, thought of him as a son until now.
Mm-hmm.
So this is that dialogue, starting with Peterson, who's going to be read by Africa, and I'm going to deal with, right?
Yep.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Stacy Talbert. Here we go. Start.
It's like a rotten cancer that has grown to spread corruption through our Constitution. A monster destined to devour its own, this devilish, peculiar institution. It's robbery accomplished with your guns, a robbery for which someday somebody's gonna pay. If not your planters, certainly your sons will reap this whirlwind being sown today, some future year when dangers from within, our enemies abroad, and pose a threat. That's when your retribution will begin. That's when you'll start to pay your awful debt.
Sir, stop these abolitionist remarks. If I were you, I'd keep them to myself. It's just that sort of statement, sir, that sparks the darkies to rebel like nothing else.
You planters only see your cotton crop. You're blinded by your avaricious greed. I'm telling you the truth and yell you stop. Because you dread to see where it will lead.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised to find someone like you in this Cato affair. He never had rebellion on his mind. Some agitator must have put it there. The Senate was discussing agitation when I was in Columbia last week. I think bears some close investigation.
So you can take away my right to speak.
I take away your right to speak to me. We have no more reason to converse.
All right, if that's the way it has to be, what I might say would only make it worse.
And now, sir, please excuse me if you will.
Of course. You've got a son you have to kill.
So this is Cato.
Cato is singing this song.
It's from a play reading we did.
If and I was God and he was me, down here praying to just be free, asking
not. Yeah, that was If and I Was God from the musical play called Creasy.
One of the greatest examples, obviously we really feel this work.
Yeah.
it's so emotional because we know, you know, the heart behind the person who wrote the words.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we hear such a beautiful rendition, please tell them who was singing that?
Vincent?
No. Yes, Vincent.
Yeah,
Vincent.
I can't remember Vincent's last name, but we were able to do a reading of that musical at the Logan Center in 2019.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the Oscar Brown Jr. Archive Project, mm-hmm. which allowed us to document and digitize and recount a lot of things, get some scores hammered out so that we can start finding interest from others to do the plays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you were saying one of the greatest examples.
Right, okay, one of the greatest examples of him implying his talents toward the American prophetics is his musical In the Beginning. Now, that was a play.
That's another musical that he made all in poetic form.
In
where
verse.
All the dialogue as well as all the songs, everything rhymes.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes you on a spiritual journey. It's reimagining the creation story from the book of Genesis, in fact. And so it's through soulful lens that he uses a rich Negro dialect to recall.
It blends scripture.
Yeah.
It blends jazz, gender politics, humor, humanity, all in one theatrical experience. It's a story we all know, the creation story.
Right. And so that's where it's Daddy Stuff is poetry and theater.
That's right. That's poetry and theater. You know, and that's Oscar Brown Jr. That's why this was so perfect.
And so it started out this piece that came to be known as the play called In the Beginning. Daddy used to do this spoken word piece inside of his show, a show called Joy. It was done on Rush Street at the place called The Happy Medium back in the 60s. Indeed, Joy 66. So Daddy would do this piece called Women's Ways. And it was, we might have taken a good 10 minutes to recite, and he'd act it out and play all the characters and everything. And we grew up on that ever since I was a little girl and even before Africa got here. And so then he ended up writing a play. And what was Women's Ways became about the middle instead, because he had to go back to the very top and tell the story from when existence was first beginning to begun.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so now let's see on this one.
We're going to show you an excerpt of the play. Now, okay, so set it up. It's like, to put it in contemporary terms,
right.
Adam had to FAFO.
about the powers of the God, about the Lord, you know, and that's what happened in this scene with Adam and the Lord.
That's right. Mm-hmm. So the Lord has just created man, right? And in his own image. And he is pleased indeed.
Woo! This won't quit. Hello there, somebody new. Welcome home. And how to do? I's your creator. You can call me Lord.
Oh, yeah? Howdy, Lord. What gives?
Well, the main thing am you lives and develops according to the plans I's drawed. I chose Adam for your name.
Adam? If it's all the same, you mind if I have one with a more heroic sound?
Hero? Where you get that stuff? Adam sound heroic enough. Shush. Pay attention while I shows you around. I calls this place paradise. I's made all its critters twice, male and female. You can see how they're abound. Running waters and clear skies and plenty of supplies because I found a way to grow them out the ground. Mm-hmm. There's the moon, and that's the sun. Now, there's what's get the business done. It's too complicated to go into now, but you know, when you put in some time and I's not so busy, I'm going to get with you and explain exactly how. Oh, no, there's more stars than you can count. I made an extra large amount because it keeps the heavens looking nice at night. Plus, it has a special force to hold the universe on course so it don't veer off to neither left nor right. Now, everything that I creates got a way it operates that don't take too much meddling from outside. Leaves things go their natural way. And if they should chance to stray, coast, I's always there to serve and be their guide.
Hmm. How much this position pay?
This position, did you say? Well, don't you worry. You'll get more than what you's worth under any circumstance. Else you wouldn't stand a chance of surviving on this here now planet Earth.
Oh, yeah? What's that supposed to mean?
Oh, that's right. You haven't seen what can happen once I let my nature go. Grab a hold of that big rock. Get ready for a shock, because I's finna put me on a little show.
Then he dimmed the lights to doom, and the Lord made thunder boom as the lightning thundered in with heavy rain. The heavens seemed to crack. And the volcano blew its stack, and the wind whipped itself to a hurricane.
This am some of my rough stuff.
Shut it off. I've seen enough.
Oh, no, little man. It's much too soon. You ain't caught my tidal wave. Ooh, or the avalanche I'll save for the earthquake that comes after the typhoon.
This gets Adam so afraid, he goes right clean out his head as the Lord runs wild and howls and scowls and growls, has conniptions and shakes and a few good first class quakes. Adam learns him and the earth has both got bowels. The Lord lets his nature rage about a quarter of an age till he finally say,
I get carried away. But I'll turn this tempest off and go back to being soft. Soon as I done learned that Adam how to pray.
I already knows how now. But you's making such a row, you ain't heard a thing that I's been trying to say. If you just shut off this storm and make me comfortable and warm and tell me what it is you want done, I'll sure obey.
So he learned to pray indeed. Show respect and to take heed of the wonders in this world the Lord done made, of the ways it works and blends, and the blessings the Lord sends, and to say
amen
and thank you when he prays. It was Adam and the Lord in harmonious accord, complimenting one another all the way. Lord, you sure knows how to plan.
Adam, you are my main man.
And their love became the order of the day.
Once it's been agreed
that we all have need to pray to the one who leads as life proceeds along its way. Once that's fully understood, that's when we're all set for good and love becomes the order of the day.
Once we find the source of great comfort in the dark and relate it to the one who lighted every living spark. Once we finally comes to mind to return that love and kind, and love becomes the order of the day.
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 Love becomes the order of the day. Of the day.
Of the day.
Yes, love becomes the order of the day.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Now, I'm the rib still, right?
Mm-hmm, you're the rib.
Yeah.
She's still the rib.
Now, with everything he makes, from time to time, the Lord he takes and tries it out and puts him to the test. But with the hours he's had to keep, he ain't never tried out sleep. Till one day he says, I believe I'll test some rest. So he billows up a cloud, shushes everything that's loud, and for the first time, stretches out to doze. He no sooner shut his eyes when he meant to lucidize deep off into this nightmare the Lord goes. It commences with a cuss.
Damn you! I is your reverse, and I come here for to tell you, go to hell.
Then his ugliness appear. Ugly? How you get in here?
Don't you wish you knew? But I ain't gonna tell.
Though the nightmare light were dim, the Lord looked and saw 'twas him, only with himself the way he ought not be. Where love should be, 'twas hate. And the Lord, he hollered, wait! I ain't gonna let myself do this to me. I's done turned myself about. I must cast my bad self out.
I's your ugly bad self. And now that I's in, it don't matter what you say. I believe I's just gonna stay and go into business right here, selling sin.
Selling sin? In here? Oh, no. I done told you, you got to go. Now put up your dukes, because you's gwine against the law. And there, quicker than a flash, they goes off into this clash as they fit, bit, hit, spit, and claw. Battled every which way, up and down, both night and day. And could neither one of them quite get the upper hand. Good and evil, life and death, fought till they was out of breath. And if one fell down, the other one couldn't stand. Now, I doesn't claim the right to say which one took the fight, but they both was beat by time the fight were done. Them two fought fight such a fit until fight itself cried, quit! And couldn't neither one of them claim.
I won.
Still, the Lord had one more trick. First he woke himself up quick, then he hurled the devil down the wake-up hole. But as that old evil falls, the Lord hears a voice that calls.
You can never cast my memory out your soul. I's just gone down underground, and the kingdom there I'll found gonna rival yours through all eternity. Now that you've had this nightmare, you're gonna always know I's there. And all outside of you, I'll take inside of me.
That, you devil, we shall see. Then the Lord, he growed a tree to cover up that wake-up hole just like a lid.
Stuffed it with the trunk and root. Sealed the secret in the fruit.
And said,
long
as this ain't it,
You's gonna stay here.
Scene. Y'all know what happened after that. Oh, Lord.
Yeah, here we are.
Stay hid. Hey, somebody pop the cap on that one. Okay.
He's not hiding anymore.
No, okay. Not at all.
All right, all right. So, all right.
In case you couldn't tell.
Right.
We delight in this sort of thing.
Yeah, we do. We have do. A really good time doing this.
Yeah, we
this
do. Is, love doing it.
Yeah.
And there's just so much of his material. Mm-hmm. And doing the archive project made us even more familiar, not to mention just growing up watching Daddy and Africa's mom, Jean, on stage as we were being reared, right?
That's right. That's
so there's a lot of material. And
now the Archive Project.
And now the Archive Project.
We came upon things like Ragtime.
Yeah. There's a musical play also that Dad, he felt Scott Joplin was one of Oscar Brown Jr.'s heroes. And, unsung, they had a lot of things in common. Right? Mm-hmm. And so Daddy, first he would always sing this song. He made lyrics for The Entertainer.
And we all know that one. The ice cream.
Who cared or cried the day the ragtime piano man died? Were there any who sobbed and sighed as they carted him on his final ride? Was there much of a damn they gave about this talented son of a slave? When the brother passed on, another colored man gone, without a marker to put on his grave. I guess much like within The Beginning, you know, he would do this one song inside of his club act
and then
his shows, and then he ended up building a whole musical around it. He did some research, got with a Joplin and
aficionado.
Ragtime aficionado and scholar, Janet Roseman, and created a script called Maple Leaf. So this year is actually, it marks what would have been Oscar Brown Jr.'s 100th birthday. Daddy was born 10/10/1926.
Yeah.
So this 10/10/2026, we'll be cutting cake and having a great tribute at the Logan Center on the campus of U of C. You're going to hear more about it, especially if you stay in touch with the Writers Museum.
Mm-hmm.
So we became wonderful, cozy friends now because, well, one thing is this here.
Yeah.
We got a call one day and said, well, your father is going to be inducted into the Chicago Literary Hall of Fame.
Woo!
We'll be at the Woodson Library one day in July, woo-hoo, along with the wonderful Professor Timuel Black, as well as Harriet Gillum.
Come on.
You know it, Robinette.
Yeah.
Yes.
See?
Robinette, Mrs. Robinette. And so the three of them were inducted to the Chicago Hall of Fame and Literary Hall of Fame.
Yes,
and
right.
So Africa and I came to accept on our father's behalf.
And did a little bitty piece of In the Beginning.
Piece of In the Beginning, right? And that time we were standing up so I could barrel down the wake-up hole.
Yeah, she was.
Very cool. But it caught the eye of Mr. Cranston here.
Carrie Cranston.
Yeah. And he told Nate and Christopher and Allison about us. And it just so happened they were about to come forward with this wonderful exhibit called American Prophets. And when they saw what a prophetic piece In the Beginning was, we were invited to help put together a banner that is, there are banners hanging in what's known as the Chicago Room of Gallery that's here in this wonderful museum. And you'll see wonderful other writers from around here, whether they lived here, were born and raised, or they spent a lot of time. The Chicago Gallery is down there, and now there is a banner for Daddy, Oscar Brown Jr. So we helped figure out, you know, we were like, Daddy's so hyphenated. How many titles can we get on our banner? You know, can we at least get three? Because two won't do it. And they did. We fit lyricist, poet, playwright, what else? Actor, politician. Anyway, the other side has wonderful material, including it talks about In the Beginning. Because just like it's based on the book of Genesis, it would explain our genesis of being able to be here and have the banner up here. Africa actually grew up, really cut her teeth at a young age on that musical. She, what do you call that, originated the role of Eve. Because, of course, in the story of Genesis, there was Adam and Eve, the Lord, the devil, and the serpent. And our sister was the Lord, Daddy was the Rev,
Africa's mom was the serpent, and our cousin was the devil. Our brother was in the van. And so Africa said, she realized one day, like growing up inside the Wizard of Oz. You know,
It really was.
One time on set, she even bumped her head because she would come down on a slide.
I did not bump my head. I fell backwards. Okay, look.
And
like, you know those steel drums that they, you know, have outside and they'll burn fire? Yeah. Okay, so those were the stairways to heaven. Right. My father was very, creative. Right. And so there would be a little one, a bigger one, a bigger one, a bigger one, and that would lead up to heaven, right? Mm-hmm. So during the scene, I'm supposed to, you know, wallop, wham, whap, and I get knocked backwards. And I went back too far and must have knocked my head on that steel drum thing and was out cold on stage for a moment. For a good
and
little
her
moment.
Mom and her dad and her
my mom,
her
my
sisters.
Daddy, my whole family was like, the baby, you know, they're going to get me.
Oh, by
you
the
know?
Way, did I say she was like 7, 8 years old?
Yeah.
By the time she was 8, Africa won, she was the youngest person to win the Joseph Jefferson Award for her co-starring role in Indie
Best
Beginning.
Supporting actress in a musical.
Yes, still to this day, she's the youngest person to ever win
That's true.
The Joseph Jefferson Award.
So I was out cold.
Yes.
And they was about to stop the show, and I must have came through
and came to and said my line. Yep, came to and she came through.
My daddy must have just, he was just beaming. After the show, I got ice cream. He took me out. He bought me presents, and he kept calling me a trooper.
Yeah.
He's like, you were such a trooper. You were such a trooper.
Because they figured they're gonna have to stop the show, maybe call an ambulance.
I was like, no, I'm all right. I'm all right.
And did my line. Yeah.
I'm little, trooper. I don't know better.
That was trooper action. Yeah. So we're hoping for this 100th, that this is the perfect excuse to bring Daddy out of obscurity. Mm-hmm. Maybe some of you all, hopefully all of you all already knew something about Oscar Brown Jr., but so few do. Mm-hmm. He is such a Chicago treasure, just really a treasure to this nation, because he was a hip dude. And he had a hip philosophy. Mm-hmm. And hip actually stands for, in the Philosophies 101 of Oscar Brown Jr., H-I-P.
Human Improvement Potential. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, this campaign is one that we hope to make very infectious.
Yeah, the hip campaign.
Yeah, turning folks on to the desire. First, we have to create a desire to want to be hip. Mm-hmm. And then to find ways to demonstrate hipness, as he defined it, is... It means it's wisdom based on truth.
Wisdom.
It's good health, and it doesn't lead to negative self-indulgence, but is healthy and wellness.
Compassion.
And, yes, offering creative ways to love. Mm-hmm. And so any program embodying those things is what?
A hip program.
And anything that doesn't have that?
Is not.
Right? Mm-hmm. Pretty much, in a nutshell. And so a lot of this material is very hip. Even Daddy coined the phrase edutainment. Or the term edutainment. Mm-hmm. I had never heard that back in the 80s. You know, a lot of people use it now. Everybody's like, you should have trademarked it. Oh, well. Anyway, he wanted to give it away.
Tell him
how Daddy felt about what he got in the way of his talent and gifts.
Right. He said that it was given to him for free and that all he had to do was pay attention. And that if he was paid what he paid, he would be well paid. And
so it just for people to pay attention.
That's what he, that's what he was looking for.
And boy, when the internet came and kind of leveled the playing field, because of course you have to look. Oscar was a recording artist during the time, top of the 60s. You know, there were shenanigans,
and they were taking his stuff out of the record stores because he was singing the Lone Ranger and Tonto was riding down the Ravenhole Trail when a band of Indians found him, proceeded to surround him.
The Lone Ranger turned kind of pale. Tonto, our lives are in danger. We gotta get away if we can.
Tonto just looked at Long Ranger. He said, what you mean, we white man? Tell me what you mean, we white man. Tell me what you mean, we white man. You're in heavy trouble. but it don't involve me, white man.
Oh, so you know they were mad. They removed it from the radio station. This is the only time Daddy's song was climbing the charts. I tell you. And so this was like, he was on Atlantic Records.
No, nigga, you can't do that.
Right? It was the 70s. And I found out because I did a panel on black music. I started researching. They were like, yes, you're doing a panel on soul and funk music. I was like, well, I mean, I experienced it. I love all the funk music that came out when I was growing up. But it turned out those Atlantic recording days, they actually categorized Oscar's music as funk and soul. So he was a folklorist, a storyteller. The thing that bothers us, like, and why it's so important to do all we can, especially while it's the 100th and we can get more attention than we ever would, they had the 50th anniversary and commemoration of hip-hop and rap, and his name didn't come up.
Now,
we don't consider our daddy no rapper, although he is a grandpap of rap. Mm-hmm. What he was doing in his spoken word, his rhyming cadences to jazz beats at the top of the 60s, mm-hmm. with a social justice mm-hmm. message and in your face, not like crude or lewd, but you know, just real. Now, if I'm not mistaken, I once read back during that short spell I spent in school, where every slave set free was supposed to get for slaving 40 acres and a mule. Now, ain't no telling how much work was done by my ancestors under slavery's rule, but sure as hell, Toto's got to run at least to 40 acres and a mule. Now, I'm not saying this to see folks sweat, because I'm not bitter.
Neither am I cruel.
But ain't nobody paid for slavery yet.
About my 40 acres and my mule.
We had a promise, and that was taken back. And when we hollered, it was,
hush, be cool.
Well, me,
I'm being rowdy, hot, and black. I want my 40 acres and my mule. Don't tell me not to get myself upset. Don't look at me like I'm some sort of ghoul. Just answer quietly, when do I get my goddamn 40 acres and my mule?
No thanks. I'll take my own self out to lunch. No thanks. I'll dig me my own swimming pool and lay and play around with my own bunch. If I was to get 40 acres and a mule. Because see, interest got to go on, just like rent. I may be crazy, but I ain't no fool. Let's see, 100 years of debt at 10% per year, per 40 acres and per mule. Now, add that up.
Ooh, yeah. I see ya.
No wonder they call great-grandma Jewel. Just pay me that and call the whole thing square. Yes, Lord. 40 acres and a mule. Yeah, so that got the man in trouble.
Yeah, he wasn't too popular. You know how
they called him too outspoken.
Yeah, before Kendrick Lamar.
Yeah, ahead of his time. You know what they could say about pops. But boy, I tell you, it's one thing that we discover is that no, his stuff wasn't. It's timeless. It might have been ahead of its time, but it's definitely time now. Mm-hmm. In so many arenas, so many fronts, and so one of the songs that Oscar wrote, words for it, that have been covered by a lot of artists, Diane Reeves, Dee Dee Bridgewater, Gregory Porter, and most recently, Erykah Badu mm-hmm. sang on Robert Glasper's project, the Black Radio project of his. And now that's real contemporary. Robert Glasper, if you don't know his name, he's played and collaborated with everybody. And so Erykah sang Daddy's lyric to Afro Blue on that project. But man, back in those 60 days, cats did not have no concrete clad contracts for their little music and stuff. And, you know, Oscar doesn't even always get credit
And that's sort of a slap in the face, especially when someone that's very evil and diabolical and seems to be trying to send the whole country and possibly good portions of the world to hell in a handbasket, that person actually used to pull out of their lapel a poem at the rallies, at the 100th day of office, the first time he was in the office. He would read these words and try to make the meaning twisted to what he wanted you to think, which is, this is how you should feel about immigrants and people showing up to the border. On her way to work one morning down a path alongside the lake, a tender-hearted woman saw a poor half-frozen snake. His pretty colored skin had been all frosted with the dew pole thing. She cried, I'll take you in and I'll take care of you. Take me in, tender woman. Take me in, for heaven's sake. Take me in, tender woman. Because daddy would perform this. He would sing this with little kids in his nightclub act. It's his song, right? Mm-hmm. So this dude keeps reading, right? He keeps reading it at his rallies through the years, y'all. Time and time again. Time and time again.
Who did you say wrote it?
Never said who wrote it. If he tried to mention who he thought it was by, he'd say someone that covered Oscar Brown Jr.'s tune. But instead, he used it. And he used it. And it hurts me today because people, weak-minded ones, when they hear something over and over again and it can influence them and make them feel so self-righteous to think in a twisted way. You see, the punchline at the end is that the woman comes back and finds that the snake she'd taken in had been revived. And when she kisses and holds him tight and says, you'd have died if it weren't for me, the snake, instead of saying thanks, he gave her a vicious bite. And so that propaganda over and over has made people think it's okay for them to take to our streets with their masks and their weapons. And he was so opposite of that. Oscar Brown Jr. was so opposite of that. It's really amazing that of all the poems in all the world, that guy used this guy's poem over and over and over.
And in the end, the snake says, you know, mm-hmm. she goes, I saved you, cried the woman. Mm-hmm. You bitten me, but why? You know your bite was poisonous, and now I'm going to die.
Ah, shut up, silly woman,
said the reptile with a grin.
You knew damn well I was a snake
before you took me in.
And so when we were on CNN and
MSNBC
talking about how our disdain for this happening, Africa brought up the fact that, wow, actually, all you have to do is change one word. You knew damn well I was a snake before you voted me in. Just change one little word because, my God. And then we're like, Daddy, how'd you get the snake to say the snake?
Yeah, man.
Over and over and over.
It was really wild because just because he's gone, you know, but then you hear this one of the most seen people saying his words out of his mouth. I was like, this is like some kind of weird joke my dad's playing from somewhere.
He would show up to his rallies and say, a lot of people outside were asking me to do the snake. You guys want to hear it?
Stop trying to do the voice.
Well, no, he doesn't even talk about that. And then the people would be like, yeah! Like he's a rock star and this is his hit song.
Mm. But the songs that dad wrote that he loved, like on his deathbed, his pastor asked him, what is your favorite song? And out of all the songs, he said, Column of Birds. Now, there's a song called Column of Birds. Mm-hmm. And Column of Birds is the most sweet.
It's the most beautiful song.
Beautiful
the
song.
The most unifying, universal concept, you know. And what was the thing that the nurse, what did daddy tell him when the nurse asked him, when seemed like we figured out we weren't
gonna, It was the hospice nurse. And she was like, Mr. Brown, you know, is there anything we could get you? You know, anything you want at all, anything at all. And he said, I just want to make sure I have the right attitude. Mm-hmm. And,
Yeah.
I'm like, no, I'm not going to cry. I'm okay. I got this.
Yeah. So we're going to tell you about Column of Birds, and then it's probably, let's see. 47.
It's about time to go. Yeah.
We still have some moments. So should we
say
that?
Column of Birds, yeah. Mm-hmm. Column of Birds is.
This happened because he witnessed
this intense migration of birds while in California.
Seemed yeah, like
one of those. He was crossing, I'll just say, the Golden Gate Bridge, right? It was one of those real long ones that they have over there. And he had never seen such a sight as this migration of birds. And man, what he wrote after that. What? You?
Come on.
Me?
Oh, really? Okay.
She like to act like she don't know all these songs too. Ding. I saw millions of migrating birds flying over today. Couldn't tell which was leading and showing the others the way. But I thought as I watched them sail by, extending for miles in the sky, what a blessing it must be to fly with a column of birds. They were soaring in search of the source of some almighty force. All adrift in the drafts of the winds without altering course. Gripped by gravity here on the ground, I wondered where they might be bound, where the site of the search may be found by this column. How did they get it together
to take off as one and go race
this column of birds of a feather off to some better place? How did they make the connection?
How did they come to agree? Fly
in a single direction toward what not one of them see. They were
coming and coming and going and going and gone.
Some distant dawn. As I turned and went back to my plow, to the grind of my grim here and now, I wished our kind might take off somehow, like this column of birds. Whistler.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I do not. we have a really good time together, and we have a really good time with this work. We have a really good time with the audience, and we're so happy to be able to share this with you and be intimate with you and cry and laugh with you and sing and all of that stuff. You know, it's such a blessing, you know, to be born in such a time, because it's really a crazy time right now. But, you know, we're here, and I think that the resilience of the human spirit is always going to prevail. At least that's the way that we've been taught, and that's the message, that hip message that we are going to keep spreading.
I
guess
if you all had anything you wanted to ask or say or whatever, we only have a few minutes left. This is our brother. There's a song called Brown Baby. Brown baby, brown baby, when you grow up, I want you to drink from the plenty cup. I want you to stand up tall and proud. I want you to speak up clear and loud. Brown baby was a revolutionary song.
Uh-huh.
And that's right. And Daddy wrote that song about this brother right here. Stand up, Napoleon.
Daddy's firstborn.
He's firstborn. Looking just like him. That's our brother, yeah.
So what's your question?
Yeah, what's your question, bro?
I was simply going to point out that the true blessing is the fact that you can tell the story that would make him proud. And to experience that, and having grown up with that, I really appreciate the fact that you two do what you do. And thank you very much.
Yeah. Usually he's working. There was a time when Napoleon was even, our brother was helping to manage Daddy toward the end of Dad's life and stuff. But for the most part, since then, of course, he's just been working and he doesn't often get to come to the shows and stuff like that. So
it's really a treat.
It is something because Nap knew Daddy pretty intimately and would watch how he would, Dad got like possessed at one point and he was just writing this thing. It was like, it was something just really pouring into him. And he called that whole piece
The Outpouring.
That he called it
The Outpouring is what he called it.
He would just be writing. So then if I'd come by, you know, next day or whatever, he'd be like, listen, this thing I wrote. And then he just, you know, he was always sharing what he wrote and sharing his ideas.
Anytime he walked by, he's like, here, check this out. Check this out. Come check this out. Because that's all he did. He was writing. He was writing, you know?
But he didn't publish, see? Mm-hmm. There is one little poetry book
that I would called
What It Is.
Poems and Opinions of Oscar Brown Jr. And it is available now.
Yeah,
we just re-released it.
That was put out a little before he passed, right? And so now we just recently made What It Is, the poetry of Oscar Brown Jr., available online. We encourage everybody to go to
oscarbrownjr.com or .org. And the book is for sale.
Yeah. And so we will be soliciting support for our activities that we plan. Again, we'll be at the Logan Center on the 10th of October.
For sure.
We hope to have a nice street festival at Harper Court because Oscar did show business at the Harper Theater. Many of you have gone there surely only for movies, but there was a time that was a legitimate stage theater. And in 1967, Daddy ran a show called Summer in the City on that stage. And and then what else? So we hope to do some in Harper Court this summer. Usually we're blessed to be in Hyde Park Jazz.
Right. All the festivals. All the festivals.
Downtown Chicago Fest, you know, we put in a little proposal.
Yeah.
We put our little bid in. And they should, because it's the 100th of Oscar, Miles, and Coltrane. And so hopefully we'll get to maybe even join some forces with some of the folks coming in to make tribute to Miles Davis, because some of those are our friends. So, we want to get the material out. So we thank the American Writers Museum very much for the gift of the banner being in the gallery and for the opportunities we've had to just expose you brilliant audiences to what this is.
That's right.
And to encourage the use of this wonderful place, and we got to turn young people on to
it. Oh my God, got to.
It just seems really hip. First time we came,
we were like it was like Disneyland because you know we're into writing, so it was like, oh my God, look at this! Oh my God, look at this!
That,
so it
was
like, great. So we love this place. Yeah.
I'm Maggie. This is my dear sister,
Africa Brown.
We call ourselves two brown sisters.
Two brown sisters.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode from the American Writers Museum Podcast Network. Be sure to subscribe so you are notified when new episodes are released. Now go, be inspired, and find the mind of a writer in yourself.